You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
And now, a man who triumphed the rights of the obese.
You have the right to eat what you want. If you do, anything you eat can and will be deposited directly in your hips. You have the right to a heart bypass surgery. If you cannot afford a heart bypass surgery, one will be provided to you by the county.
Your host, Lou Costanzo.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Ensign Roe. I'm Matt from Tennessee.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Matt from Tennessee. I'm looking at your Skype picture, and it looks like you're in front of a shuttle.
Oh, I don't know which picture that is. Is it probably from a trip I took to Kennedy Space Center at some point?
Yeah. It looks really cool. I can't make out what's the name of the shuttle. I don't even know if it's on the picture, but...
Oh, is it the one where it's on display?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the shuttle Atlantis they have down at Kennedy.
Oh, the one that went up in space camp.
Yeah. Yeah, the only shuttle flown by the kids, that's right.
That's right. Are you familiar with that story, Doc?
I am not. I thought I knew my the space shuttle history quite well.
Well,
I know Atlantis was obviously, it was the fifth, right? It was the one that replaced the Challenger.
No, that was Endeavour.
So what? Go ahead. I'll tell you the story.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Edit this out. I was going to look stupid.
I can't.
Well, I can't name my shuttles. I do know them all.
Okay, here's the deal, Doc. The legend goes that Space Camp is a real organization that kids can go and learn how to be astronauts. Well, some kids were selected for a launch test that got turned into an actual launch because of a glitch in the system, and they had to launch this astronaut and these, five or six kids into space, or they would have died. Now, the good thing about this story...
Was this on, Saturday morning TV?
Yeah, that was going to say, that's the good part of the story is that it was actually a movie, and it wasn't a real-life situation.
The real tragedy of this movie is that it was scheduled for release about two weeks after the Challenger disaster.
Oh, yeah.
So they delayed it for a few months, so it came out the summer of 86. And after the disaster, it didn't do so well in the box office.
No, it didn't. It was jinxed. Jinxed. Jinx launched Max into space. Jinx can get Max back.
Have you not seen this movie, James?
No, I have no idea what any of this is about.
I should have put that on the thumb drive or the thing I gave you. That way you could have watched it with your kids. My wife watched it last night, so it was pretty good. It's okay. It has young, what's her name, that becomes Marty McFly's mother in Back to the Future.
Oh, Leah Thompson.
Leah Thompson. As a young Leah Thompson when she was about 18 or 19, and she was hotter than snot. Anyway. Oh, yeah. And, of course, the obligatory girls in their underwear scene in their dorm, which I thought, I asked my wife, why the hell are they in their underwear? But, wait, you know something? I may have actually done a review of Space Camp on the Lou Truck Show.
Oh, did you?
I think I did. I'm not sure. While we're talking, I'll go on further. So what's happening lately with you, Matt, since you've been on last...
Since I've been on last, I've changed jobs A little bit. I transferred from a hospital that was an hour drive away to one that's only about 15 minutes. So it's shortened my commute down quite a bit. And we're in the process now of buying a house. So we've been packing up the last couple weeks, getting ready to move into towns. Is going to put us even closer. So we're excited about it.
That's cool. I do like the fact that it takes me about five, six minutes to get to work.
Yeah, I used to have to drive, you know, an hour each way. So, you know, a good portion of my day was spent in the car driving. So at least I don't have to worry about that so much anymore.
Wow. That is cool. And then our doctor takes the morning train. He works from 9 to 5 and then he brings it back home again.
Sorry, 9 to 5. It's more like 5 to 9 where I'm at the moment. I am going to moan about it. It's at least a 90-minute journey each way at the moment, and when it goes bad, it can get worse. It can get very bad. Actually, Lou, last week, I think it was last week, or when we were recording with Brian, the main train station I have to leave out of, there was a fire, and it was closed for the entire evening.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had to do this really weird snake across London, you know, on really bad dodgy lines. So it took me at least 2 hours to get home that day.
Wow. Okay. Well, I feel for you then. You win. You win. So, all right. So for me, nothing else is going on. In the next couple of weeks, I get to do the mayoral election again. I don't know where they're going to put me, but this is becoming a bizarre one because it's the guy who wants to get rid of our mayor, who wants to take her job, brought on Bernie Sanders. And if you know who he is, he was a waste that wanted to go for president and didn't even get close to it. And of course, he thought he was cheated. But it's just getting interesting here. So beyond that, I did mention that I put in for a surveillance position at the casino I work at, and I haven't heard back from them in 4 weeks, so my assumption is I didn't get the job, which is all right, because it would have been a pay cut, and I don't want a pay cut. But beyond that, I will be changing schedules here shortly, so therefore, I don't go into work until midnight on Saturday, your time, James, which means that if we were to bring back our 8 p.m. Saturday, Friday, and Saturday shows, we could actually do that. Even on Sunday, we could be a hell of a lot more accommodating because I won't go until 6 o'clock on our time, my time, midnight, your time. So goodness, we should be able to have no problem any day of the week, except for when you're not available to record our show. So, guys, bear with us for a little bit longer.
Lou, you're making it sound like soon the quality of our guests will go up because we'll be more accommodating, and I don't think that's a message we should put out there.
Oh, no. It's going to be easier on our guests' lives because they don't have to try and conform to our schedule. We can conform to, like we used to do, for them to make it easier. But even if I was to say the quality of guests will be going up, it won't be going up till season 6 because we're pretty book solid. But no, I'm happy we're booked again, and we've got some great people that are ready to come on, and they're going to be a lot happier because we're going to be able to conform to what they need to do in life. So with that in mind,
I'll try not to take it personally that you're stuck with the likes of me for the time being.
Yeah, well, the only thing I could see wrong is a couple shows with the guy who's questionable. It's going to be Power Play and The Outcast. Wait, that's you.
Oh, yeah. Well, whoops. Shady characters here.
Damn it, Lou. You got to learn not to speak before you know what you're saying. Okay.
You've got a year before that'll happen.
Definitely, probably. Oh, hey, not if we're going to try and beat the Russians to the moon. otherwise known as UP2, to the end of the series. Because they're on our heels bad. So, all right. But anyway, why don't you go ahead and start reading whenever you want to go on there, Matt.
All right. So, Ensign Ro, this was the third episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was originally released on October 7th, 1991, written by Rick Berman and Michael Piller, directed by Les Landau. Guest stars include Michelle Forbes as Ro Laren, Scott Marlowe as Keeve Fellore, Jeffrey Hayenga as Orta, Frank Collison as Gul Dalak, Harley Venton as Collins, Ken Thorley as Mott, Cliff Potts as Admiral Kennelly, special guest star Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan.
Oops.
Guinan.
Did I spell that wrong?
No. And Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer.
Computer.
So what do we think of this episode?
Hey, that's it. Computer. It has to be computer. If router, R-O-U-T-E-R, is pronounced router, then computer, P-U-T-E-R, has to be computer.
Have you guys ever seen that clip on YouTube of the Star Trek cast where they're trying to, they see the picture of the comedy group of Whoopi Goldberg and they pronounce her name as Whoop High?
No.
Have you never seen that?
Lou, it's very good. It's for it's kind of like a fundraising comedy thing, and Data's very good in it. They do kind of like, they're playing it serious, and then they break the fourth wall, and they kind of like, you know, they look at the Whoopi Goldberg, and then is it me or does she look a bit like Guinan? And then they go, nah, it's all very good.
Okay. I'm already doing Google search.
I forget what charity it was for. It was for something, but I...
Well, there's one that says Star Trek cast interview with Whoopi. Comic relief. Star Trek TNG Whoopi? No.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. It was that's comic it. Relief.
Okay. I will check it. So what do you think about Ensign Ro, Matt? What's your brief thoughts?
I like this episode. I like the character they brought in, you know, Ensign Ro, and it had a good storyline to it. I kind of wish they would kind of follow this up a little bit in some future, you know, episodes. I don't know if they ever do though. The whole Bajoran thing.
But, it's unfortunate. It's like an Alien of the Week kind of introduction, isn't it?
Yeah, you never hear about them again. It's unfortunate. They had so much potential here.
Yeah. Okay. Doc?
So, okay, where am I coming this week? Lou, you really need to find a better co-guest or co-host. I'm just dreadful. I really, really am dreadful. I don't remember having, you know, particularly fond memories of this episode, but I watched it earlier on today and, you know, rewatched it earlier on today as well. And I thought it was great. And I really liked it. And I then started thinking, I thought, you know, really, is this just not a perfect introduction of the Ro character? Isn't the Ro character a great addition to the cast? I thought it was an intriguing storyline. And yeah, I kind of came away from it really positive. I don't have a huge amount of negative this week. And it's going to just be a gushing episode from my perspective. So sorry about that.
Okay. Okay, well, for me, I do like it as well, and you're right, it is a good introduction. Even Memory Alpha points to the fact that, you know, Star Trek Trekkies, I don't even know what a Trekker is, but a Trekkies are finicky people, and when you bring new people on, they tend to dislike that. So, it was a perfect idea to let Guinan introduce Ro, not only to Picard for, you know, all intents and purposes, but for us as well. And when Guinan says, she's my friend, you must listen to her, you must accept her, she's not only saying that to Picard, she's saying it to us. That's what they say, and I believe it. So it is a pretty good introduction for our Ro character. However, I've always been pretty down on Ro. I don't seem to care much for her contribution in the past. Now, doing this podcast, I'm going to reserve my opinions of Ro until we get to, you know, episode by episode. Because I like what she did here. I like her feistiness. I like the she bends Picard to her will at the end. And I think, you know, she might make a very interesting character. Even Riker hates her. But we're going to talk about something that he actually does that I bet neither one of you and maybe a lot of people listening to this didn't realize they missed. And you're going to go back and watch it and find out. It's pretty close to the end of the episode, but I'm going to tell you something that's it'd be funny. And it's even going to be in our artwork for this episode that goes on to Trekmate. So it'll be funny.
You've piqued my interest.
That's what I try to do.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're referring to.
We'll see. Just remember what Riker's all about. So this.
Yeah, I'm a little afraid about that.
So this time Picard was lucky. He was getting a haircut by Mr. Mott. I like Mr. Mott. He just has opinions about everything, and he's always right. Just ask him, and he'll tell you. But why was Picard lucky? Well, you know, there's always a time when to call a Romulan's bluff and not. And it turns out, I don't know what he was referring to. The only thing I could think of, do you think maybe he's discussing the Shall We Die Together thing with Tomalak?
No, I kind of took away from this being a much more recent event, selecting something that happened earlier on that day or that week. I didn't think they were keeping it, you know, an event from 2 years back. But, you know, it's obviously not necessarily made clear.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of how I took it, too. I figured it was the missing episode that maybe we could have seen but didn't, that happened just prior to this.
Oh, well, maybe we need to devise a plot line and do a review on it. Okay. But anyway.
Well, it's kind of like, do you remember that season one episode? Was it Angel One, I think it was, where there was a Romulan thing going at the neutral zone they had to get to, but they had to deal with whatever it was. So, you know, there was this whole other Romulan thing going on, but we never got to see it because we're dealing with, you know, whatever, you know,
I think you mean the neutral zone, where we had the... No?
No. I think it was... Okay, Angel One sounds about right, but also in the back of my mind, I'm thinking also Arsenal of Freedom had another kind of similar issue. But there was something whereby there was a ticking clock outside, and it was a Romulan. You know, something going wrong on the Romulan border, and they had to rush back, and they ended up solving their problem, and then... warping away, and then that's about it. Nothing else happened.
They go to deal with the situation and roll credits.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, it was kind of like that. I'm assuming they deal with the Romulans all the time. We just never see it.
Ah, well, whatever the situation was, Mr. Mott has a better solution than what he should have done, and it turns out Commander Riker agrees with him 100%. Just as he says that, that's when Riker calls, and I love the look on Picard's face when he acknowledges his call. It was kind of like a what, number one, type of thing. But we do see Mr. Mott at least one time later. Don't we?
Do we? I remember Picard impersonates him at one point.
I don't remember that, but I think we see Mr. Mott again later.
Oh, Starship Mine, Space Die Hard. He's the terrorist on the ship, and Picard's like, my name is Mott, I'm the barber.
Oh, that's right, yes, I'm the barber. So, this is the Bajora. This is a word used in only this episode, as far as I know. So, in DS9, they're called the Bajorans, and the planet's called Bajor. So, Bajora.
So, isn't the retcon here that the Bajora corresponds to the terrorist cell that happens to be full of Bajorans operating on behalf of Bajor? Or did I make that up myself?
No, that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
We'll roll with that.
Because they go back and forth with Bajora and Bajorans. And Bajoran. They do say Bajorans. They go back and forth with it, so it's hard.
I mean, at least it's not as bad as the Volcanian, right?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. But you got a good point. Maybe that's what it is. It was a Bajora, the so-called terrorist group. Okay, so the Cardassians annexed the Bajoran homeworld 40 years ago, which sounds reasonable enough. Even Omaha annexes similar communities around it. It just means more taxation for the city, not slave labor camps. So do you think maybe they, you know, obviously they didn't flush out what they were doing with the Bajoran people yet, so they just chose the wrong word as opposed to occupation than it's called later. And they...
I'm gonna stop you here because, you know, obviously, I mean, despite what kind of Matt said, we do actually run into the Bajorans a little bit later on, and they, of course, flesh out the backstory. I was surprised how coherent the backstory already is.
Yeah.
I actually thought that the way that they described it, I was expecting, you know, just having misremembered the episode, I was expecting it to be like a, you know, oh, there have been issues with the Cardassians, or there wouldn't be an explicit occupation. I took the language in terms of annex as being completely consistent with it being an occupation. Now, I thought it was more like 60 years rather than 40.
50.
But you know, whatever. That's all fine. It's certainly, you know, multi-generational kind of occupation. And they describe also the Bajorans themselves as having like an ancient civilization, which is obviously very true, and being architects and artists, which again we see more and more of. So I thought they ended up being, apart from the little kind of extra ridges they have on their nose, I thought the Bajorans came in pretty fully formed, or at least without having to wreck on anything, as we later learn more about their culture.
Well, when Kennelly says is they were chased off their planet by the Cardassians, forced to wander the galaxy trying to find room. But really, you know, they flush out later that the Bajorans weren't chased off their planet. They were just occupied and forced to do the Cardassians' dirty work, I guess you could say. And so I think that's nitpicking. I get that.
No, but sure. But I mean, let's say that, you know, if someone were to annex a country or to occupy a country, you know, there will be people, there will be refugees, right?
Yes.
That leave the country, that leave the planet. And I kind of interpret it very much in that kind of sense, that, you know, those that didn't want to stay, you know, have to leave. And also, frankly, there's obviously, you know, very significant overtones here of, you know, the displacement of the Jewish population. That's what I kind of read into it, that's being put out there. And I think that's one of the parallels that they're trying to explicitly put across, in terms of how they can wander from place to place feeling like outcasts.
Which I could see your point. The only reference I was using is on DS9 when we see Tarak Nor. Nobody was allowed to leave. I mean, they couldn't say, well, you know, maybe I just want to flee my this here and go somewhere else. They were stuck there and forced to slave labor. So I assumed that was probably on the planet as well.
Well, I would assume probably during the occurrence of the Cardassians taking over, there would be the people who were able to flee before they took hold. But once the occupation was firmly established, then everything was kind of locked down. But up till that point, if you could get out, they could.
Yeah. Well, I think, like James says, they're pretty dang accurate. There's a few things that may or may not be accurate. It doesn't matter, because either way, DS9 got a much better history and did the Bajorans right, even if they're snobbish Bajoran assholes. Which, you know, I can't wait to get to DS9 when we do Lower Pylon 2. Because I agree with the upper guys. The Bajorans, when you really watch them, they are jerks. So it's going to be interesting. So we get a new officer, Ensign Laren. Oops, did I say that right? Nope, I didn't. Ensign Roe Laren, or Ensign Roe. And you wouldn't believe how difficult it was to get her out of prison. So, what do you think that she really did? Because they really don't describe her crime except for 8 people died.
I kind of always assumed that, I mean, I don't think she killed anyone, because otherwise she wouldn't, you know, they're not going to let anyone out. But I assumed there was something similar to, you know, she either disobeyed orders or didn't follow through on orders correctly, or, you know, was negligent, and certainly, you know, something led to their deaths, or something, contributed to the situation getting very bad very quickly.
Yeah, that's what I got out of it, too. A negligence type, you know, she disobeyed orders, did something that she wasn't supposed to, and as a result of that, these 8 people died.
Mm-hmm. She didn't kill him. I don't think she, like, phased them at close range one by one. Well, I hope not, anyway. I mean, the character
would have been a whole other episode.
Yeah. Okay. But we see Ensign Roe, and she has her earring on the wrong ear, of course. Oh, wait, I wouldn't nitpick anymore, sorry.
Is it the wrong ear? Sorry, is it?
Yeah, she has it on the left ear, and it's rather big, too. I mean, I don't know, maybe she's just, you know, compensating for something by wearing
it. Maybe she was right, and everybody else wears it wrong.
And that would be her attitude. You're right. That is very true about her. And I kind of think that's what makes her a good character. But Riker hates her instantly. Nope, we're not going to talk about it yet. But don't worry, he'll come around.
I mean, I thought that was amusing too, because wasn't that one of the reasons Picard picked him as first officer? Is because he refused an order?
Yeah. Yeah, he yep, refused to let Captain DeSoto beam down to a planet. So why didn't he get court-martialed? Because no one died?
I guess that would be the kicker.
Yeah, I suppose. it's like a Tom Paris, Nicholas Locarno thing, you know? Nicholas Locarno was a cadet who accidentally killed one of his class members during the Cold War starburst, or whatever it's called. We'll get to that later. And and Tom Paris did something stupid as well, which caused the death of 2 people. So, nice.
Yeah, but I mean, it just seems like Riker should have some sort of an understanding, if nothing else, mm-hmm. that you know, sometimes you got to disobey the orders.
Okay. But don't worry. Riker will end up schnogging her in, say, a season or two. Doesn't he? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
No, he doesn't.
What's
it's less than that, I think.
What's that?
It's this season.
Yeah, it's later this season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It comes up that soon.
So here's the thing about... I mean, I've got a lot of stuff to say about Roe. And in particular, I never... I don't remember ever enjoying the character when I was younger. But the more I think about it, the more I think that she actually is very good. And in particular, I've come to appreciate how good Michelle Forbes is in the role. I think I think she has a lot to do in this episode. She actually has to carry a lot. And she's obviously against, whether it's Whoopi Goldberg or Patrick Stewart in this episode. And I think she kind of holds her own. I have to say as well, you kind of get the impression that Roe is in TNG from this point forward. And it always surprises me that when you look at, you know, how many episodes she actually is in, it's only a relatively small number.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great thing that the character is able to make such an impact that, you know, pretty much you'd be forgiven for thinking that she's semi-regular, or if not a regular, from this point forward.
Yeah, I had the same thoughts too. She seemed, as I remember when it initially aired, I thought she was like a regular part of the cast, but like you said, you look back, she was only in 7 episodes, maybe. And it doesn't, she has a lasting impact, but boy, yeah, it seemed like she was there a whole lot more than she actually was.
All right. But somebody should have asked her one simple question, you know, how was the resolution of her father, Dr. Timson?
Now, so here's the thing. Obviously, you're referring to the fact that, you know,
yeah.
last season she was a guest star. I'm astonished. Did I say anything good about that performance last time? Because I can't remember. But I think this episode, you know, she's so good. And I remember the last time she was on being, you know, she was very much, you know, average, whatever. I don't know what they saw in her, but I think that, you know, Michelle Forbes as Rogue is, you know, everything is just kind of perfect.
Yeah.
And then, in fact, I don't know if you watch, yeah, you don't watch Battlestar, right? But when she ends up playing the Admiral in Battlestar, it's a very, it's not a similar role, but it's, you can certainly see kind of a certain kind of metal kind of shining through on her performance that I think is very good.
Okay. But as far as Half a Life, you did give it a 2. So yeah. I still don't know how. But you did. I gave it a 4, and Mark Stamper gave it a 3.5. So, where do you fall on there, Matt?
Half a Life. It was funny. I thought it was half an episode. I really liked the first half, where they're talking about how I'm trying to save the star. Oh. You know, I thought that was interesting, but then you know, at the end of it, when it turned into the whole. You know, we expect you to go kill yourself now aspect of it. I don't know. The episode started to fall flat on me there. But Michelle Forbes' performance, and I thought was, you know, I thought she played that role pretty well there too. But yeah, it wasn't enough to save the episode. I would probably come down somewhere around a 2.5 or a 3, somewhere in that range.
All right.
But well, yeah, that's...
You know... I always assumed you were going to lie next to my mother, and, you know, I will not be able to lie next to you. Yeah, I know. So it was pretty good. Falik! Falik! Falika! Falik! Falik! What was that? I mean, I'm not sure if that was a name, or if that's another word for get out of here, or move on, or... But, anyway. Ro takes off her jacket and gives it to the little girl. How cute.
Oh, before you get to that, I was just back in the transporter room when Riker has... Why does he make her take the earring off?
Starfleet regulation. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Has anybody seen Worf?
Uh-huh. But Worf didn't kill 8 people. So, I mean, obviously there's a huge bias here, and there's nothing she could possibly do that's going to make any difference to him.
I don't know. I just... Seems a little thin.
Yeah, it's also not just Worf, right? It's like, you know...
Well, everyone.
I mean, Chakotay has a big face tattoo. And even Riker, right? He's got a big beard, big bushy beard sometimes. Surely, you know, that perhaps that's against the dress code.
Heck, Troy doesn't even wear the uniform.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, she's got a... yeah.
Asymmetrical whatever it's called on her.
Asymmetrical boobage.
Yes.
Maybe it is still within regulation. I don't know.
So I don't know. Well, I guess he just had to find something.
Yeah. Well, as far as Chakotay, I mean, if he had that before he became a Starfleet officer, I don't know why. What are they going to do? Make him try and remove it? How do you remove a tattoo? It's there. So, all right. So... Why does it take an act of Picard to get blankets for the colonists? I mean, I always thought one thing Riker says earlier on in the series is we don't limit access to our medical supplies. I would have thought that meant blankets as well. I cannot believe that the replicator couldn't produce 1,000 blankets anytime they need them. Hey, can we get some more blankets? We'll FedEx them your way, no problem.
Well, okay, I mean, I think what you're saying is, actually, do I think it's valid? I'm not entirely sure. Uh-huh. First, I'm not entirely sure why they didn't also include a pillow as part of these blankets, because, you know, It can be a bit of a pain if you don't have a proper pillow. But I think what in my opinion they're trying to put across is how pretty much it's not that the Federation won't give them blankets or they have any objection to doing so, but they've just been off the radar. And I think that's some of the conversations that Picard has in particular with members of of the terrorist cell when they mentioned that, well, perhaps we should have bombed you long ago. I think it's just because when you have an issue that's like out of sight, and Picard mentions some diplomatic things and a bit of various bits and pieces that they seem to be doing, being slightly annoyed at the Cardassians for having annexed their system. But to me, it seems like it's out of sight, out of mind.
Oh, sure, girl. I'm sorry, Doc. You said Cardassians, and that was simply
terrific. I didn't say Cardassians.
Yeah. Listen to this someday, and you will. That was good.
Actually, I don't even know. Later on in the episode, I think the Cardassian refers to him as a Cardassian. It's a very weird delivery of Cardassian.
I never noticed that, really. Okay.
No. When they introduce things, like when they introduce Kanar, they don't call it Kanar, they call it Kanar. And it's something that it's good that they had the continuity, but you have to get the pronunciation right from the beginning. Not otherwise, if you're petty and if you get worried by these things.
Well, everybody has their own. Well, some. How do I say this?
People with different dialects. Yes. They pronounce things differently.
There you go. Yeah. And there was a word I could think of that I can't think of right now that the Italians say it in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, some people say router, right?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I don't know where, but must be somewhere over there. So now we meet with this terrorist leader, Orta. Did I miss a few steps here?
Well, let's see. Well, we were talking about them giving them the blankets.
Yeah, but that wasn't Orta. That was another guy. Key Falor. So we meet Mr. Keev first before we get to Orta. And so what do you think of the planet, the camps, the Picard's log of, what these people have become?
Oh, what was his line? Something along, they were artists and sculptors before humans were even standing erect.
Yeah,
it goes to what we were saying before, how the Bajorans were really given a really rich history from the get-go here. And it is unfortunate that they've come to this level due to circumstances.
Yeah.
But also I think what it reflects as well, it kind of shows the Federation in this. I mean, first of all, I think our characters are relatively naive about the situation. So Crusher mentions that, I once danced with this particular Bajoran, and he was talking about the plight of his people and other things like that. And then Picard talking about how he is surprised about how far they have fallen, kind of thing. I think it shows a certain amount of naivety on the Federation side, which kind of loops into the idea that I think that, the Federation aren't really doing anything to solve this. It's almost like a forgotten cause, or a cause that's too difficult to solve in the in the current political environment that the Federation finds itself in. And so I do see the crew really being naive at the beginning and kind of only really waking up to the complexities as the story progresses.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the blankets did a lot of good things. The blankets helped. But you're right. They should have not only gotten blankets. They should have gotten pillows. Maybe some comforters, or how about new beds? I mean, soft memory foam beds would have been nice for them.
Well, heck, it's not outside the realm of possibility for them to just give them a replicator.
Yeah, industrial replicator, no less.
Let them make whatever it is that they need.
Except weapons, you know, because we're not going to do that.
Well, no.
No, we're not supposed to do that. Some might try to do that, but we're not supposed to. So now, let's go meet Orta. And, So, but before we go meet Orta, it's time for Geordi to discuss with Guinan how he'll never trust Ro. And what does Guinan do? I thought that was a pretty good scene, too. Yeah. Who are you? I'm Guinan. I tend bar, and I listen. You know? Well, they say you didn't tell the truth. Again, I wish we could have gotten more fleshed out. What was the truth? You didn't tell the whole truth on something, whatever that was, that killed 8 people. And perhaps maybe she'd left some things out for whatever reason. You know, truth. And then the truth is in the eye of the beholder thing. I actually use that a lot. I don't know if you guys do, but I do. And again, who are you? So I thought that was a pretty good scene there with Guinan.
Yeah, well, that's the scene starts with Crusher and Troy coming up asking to join her.
Oh yeah,
and
are we disturbing you? Yeah, or no. Do you mind if we join you? Yeah, I do, or something like that.
Yeah, I do mind, and they look at each other and kind of walk away. But I remember my thought was, you know. Surely, if Guinan is right and Ro actually doesn't want to be alone, Troy should have noticed that.
Yeah.
She should have been able to sense that, hey, she actually wants us to join her.
Oh.
But, I don't know. I guess that you got to get the Guinan
scene. No, I'm not so sure. I think Guinan was right when she says, you know, the only reason you come here is to be amongst people. But I think Ro's whole purpose of being there is to be an ass. She could, you know, she can't do that if she's alone in her own quarters. She just wants to rub everybody the wrong way. And the easiest way to do that is to be in public and have people try to talk to you and tell them to kiss your ass and walk off. I don't know. I think maybe...
No, that is a good... Yeah, I hadn't considered that. That's a... distinct possibility.
Yep. But she never stays anywhere long enough to make friends. But too late. You just did. And I don't think I see Guinan and Ro together again after this, but we'll find out.
They are together because they're both in Rascals, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, well, for a while. Rascals.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they also have the argument as children about, I bet you jumped on your bed. I didn't have a bed.
That's true. Yeah, they didn't have beds. Eventually, they got blankets, but they didn't have beds. Fascinating. When is Rascals, anyway?
Season 6.
Oh.
Beginning.
Yeah. Okay, so where was I in my notes here? I've lost me.
I liked how Guinan's approach, though, is, you know, she's talking with Geordi, and he's like, I don't trust her. I'm not going to turn my back on her. And Guinan's like, yeah, I'm going to go talk to her then. Yeah. That sounds like somebody I want to know.
Right.
And takes the bull by the horn, so to speak. You know, so I hear all these things about you. Are they true?
Yeah. Hearing anything interesting? Everybody's talking about you. You heard anything interesting? So, I mean, but, you know, it's obvious the crew hate them, but she does say, some people believe you didn't tell the whole truth about what happened. So either it's because there was more to it and you weren't as guilty as they think you were, or you were more guilty and you hid even more of the truth. So it's hard to figure where that goes.
Hmm.
But, yeah. We find out later that Guinan is very particular about whom she calls a friend. I thought Guinan was friends with everybody.
I did too.
So. Yeah, it takes a special type for her to call you an enemy, I would suppose.
Yeah, you got to be a Q or a Borg. But as far as I know, that's all. That's her enemy. Well, except for maybe Mark Twain. But we'll find out later about that. So everything is going exactly as you predicted, Admiral. Oh, boy, here we go. Yeah. Makes you think that they're obviously in cahoots with each other. But you don't know exactly what's going on.
And actually, I was going to say that even, you know, I think it's directly after the teaser, when they start the episode proper, you have the Admiral kind of like sneezing.
Yeah.
And again, that's already something being placed in the mind, and you think, oh, actually, you know, that's going to be important later, because otherwise, why would they do it? So I even to begin with, as you see the Admiral, or at least as I saw the Admiral when I was rewatching this time, I thought, oh yeah, that's the evil Admiral. He's sneezing. He's in cahoots with the Cardassians. And so I was kind of contaminated from the start.
Right. Yeah, there's some virus or Cardassian liaison sect on me. Well, I could see that being possible.
Do you think it's like an intimate kind of transmission?
Oh, I don't know about that. Well, if it was, you know, he achieved it orally because it's in his nose and sinuses.
I see.
So, everything is going as you predicted, Admiral. But what happens is they're going to beam down and see this Ordo. And then they find out Entenro beamed down 6 hours before. I got the... See, now, what was your first thought? Because my thought was, she ran away. She got away from them 6 hours before. But Picard doesn't even say who authorized this beam down.
But it's not going to say it was authorized by the Admiral, though.
Right.
So the fact that the Admiral told her to do it, she doesn't then go and log it in the system.
Yeah.
The thing I was surprised about here is that you've got someone that is, you know, everyone's very, very concerned to be dealing with. So they don't, no one likes Ro at this point. She, you know, she goes against her orders and she's managed to get two people, you know, X number of people killed in the last thing that led to her being court-martialed. You're dealing with terrorists that are blowing up Federation ships and this, you know, this rogue officer has disappeared. And Picard says, oh, I know, let's beam down directly to where they were. And they didn't really have any extra security or anything. And I'm surprised that, you know, why did Riker let him beam down? It seems to go against, you know, we were talking about Riker not letting Captain Soto go down.
Yeah, at that point, Riker should have said, Captain, step down, call in more security officers. We'll go in fully armed.
Yeah.
Let's see what's happening.
Good point.
And in fact, what happens as soon as they get down, of course, is that Picard is taken hostage. It's almost, it kind of needed to happen.
Oh, yeah. Just pretty much instantly. Okay. So, let's see. Molecular displacement traces. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Yes, that means there was movement within the last 10 hours. How interesting.
We know that. They beamed down to that exact location 6 hours ago. So obviously there was movement.
Well, plus, you know, the people live there. Of course there's going to be movement in the cave. They live there. But what does it mean, though? Fresh skin cells are everywhere? I mean, you know. Captain, skin follicles here. This looks pretty fresh.
Now, I was actually wondering whether they referred to someone that broke wind there. Like, oh, look, Captain, there's still this molecular displacement. He was standing here, and he did it in this direction. I mean, let's follow it.
That's good. That's a good one there. Yeah. Molecular displacement traces. Gosh, I looked away, and I've lost where I was again. Here we go. But the away team is captured pretty darn quick. Ro must have been behind it. So, obviously, she must have said, okay, they're going to be beamed down at 0800 hours. You need to be ready for them. But...
Unless they follow protocol, in which case it would have taken an extra couple of minutes to get more security.
Yeah, that's true. But they didn't. But we get to meet Orta, who has a speech synthesizer. That, what do you think of that thing?
Technology these days?
I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's similar to the voice boxes and stuff they've got today, isn't it? I mean, it's not entirely different.
I don't think it was that advanced at the time they did the episode 20-odd years ago.
Well, they could have brought on Stephen Hawking's voice thing.
Mm-hmm.
Would have made no sense, though. That wouldn't have sounded right.
Or he could have been using sign language, but who does that these days?
Yeah, that's true. Oh, and by the way, it was not the Bajora who attacked Solaria 2. Fascinating. I'm surprised Picard didn't realize that at the beginning for the reasons that they go into later. Ortis ships are old and obsolete. They don't even have warp drive. They had, what was it, half impulse? They couldn't have reached another star system, let alone attacked it. So I am surprised Picard didn't realize that or know that at the beginning instead of almost at the end. Okay. But here's that moment I was telling you about. They come back to the ship, and they're discussing, why would Orta lie? Watch Riker. This is fascinating. He is standing behind Ro, and I swear to you, he looks down, probably checking out her ass. And then, after he does that, he kind of does an up and down look on her, and then realizes what he's doing and pops his eyes back up. Watch that. You're going to see it. You're going to watch it forever. You'll see it every time. Yeah. So I thought, you know, he doesn't even speak on the bridge. So it's not like he's looking at a cue card down there somewhere. I mean, he actually physically checks her out. I don't know if it was something that, you know, they told Frakes to do, you know?
Hey, I doubt. they wouldn't need to tell him.
Well,
he's in line with his character. I mean,
is he really?
Yeah, he knows how Riker would behave.
Yeah. And he just, I mean, I swear, it's really funny. If you watch it, he actually looks at her ass and then does an up and down of her whole body and then snaps back up like he realized what he was doing. What a cad. What a cad. So everybody check that out. Go ahead and pause this right now. Go check it out. There. See, okay. I told you so.
That was amazing. Holy cow.
Yeah.
How did I not see that before?
Exactly. Doc, what about you? What did you think when you saw it?
I'm
blown away.
Yes, blown away. Yes.
Okay.
Boy, I can't unsee that now.
Yeah, well, you're never going to be able to go without that. So Guinan goes to visit the now grounded Ro Laren and tells her that she once got into some trouble, pretty bad trouble too, and she'd still be there if it wasn't for one man.
So why does Ro get grounded for disobeying orders?
Because she disobeyed orders. I mean, she went down without authorization because nobody knew at the time who authorized it.
Yeah, sure, but also, you know, Picard got kidnapped. I just think that being grounded is something that you do to your 10-year-old who's been naughty, not someone in a kind of military setup.
Okay. It
seems a little
lenient. Let's fix that. Picard told Ro she was confined to her quarters for the duration of this mission. Guinan, who is the one who came and said, I heard you got grounded.
No, I know, but it's still the same thing. I mean, I don't know why wasn't she in the brig?
Oh, well, why?
It's not as if she hasn't escaped already.
Yeah, but she's grounded. She has to stay in her room. I would say that they probably do. I don't know what she did would be serious enough to be in the brig. You know, not like Tom Paris for 30 days. But, I mean, isn't that what they usually do? Put them in their room, and if something happens bad, then they go to the brig?
Well, usually they don't have the bricks, the scenery built, right? So they haven't got the set up and running, so they put them in their quarters, because it's, you know, they have that set already built. I would have thought that was the main discriminator. Right. But even you know, not even under like a guard or anything. So Worf isn't even outside making sure no one gets in.
Okay, cool. All right. Mm. And I'm going to put a link in our show notes. I hope I remember that I just put in the chat there that I found my review of Space Camp. It was a first special feature I posted on March 10th of 2012. So, goodness, that was, 5 years ago I did that. And back then I sucked at podcasting. Well, I still kind of do, but, you know, not as bad as back then, I think. So,
well, as long as we're calling back to the beginning, I went and I looked at the picture that I had on my profile, and that's actually the Space Shuttle Pathfinder. It wasn't an actual shuttle, but it's one of the structural simulators they made, at the beginning of the program, and then it's on display at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama. That's where we were when we took that picture.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right, so let's go back to our episode here. So we find out we have another misguided admiral who's willing to violate everything in the Prime Directive by being another puppet of the Cardassians. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this the first time we see how sneaky and clever the Cardassians really are, but yet they still never get away with it?
I don't think that's sneaky or clever. I think this is possibly the stupidest admiral in Starfleet. he didn't have anything to gain. What did he gain? He's not even they've like bought him out or anything. He's just I don't exactly know what the plan here was. It's like, oh yeah, do you mind, sending people over and then we'll cure them? Yeah, sure. Let me have this convoluted plan that puts me in danger and in and in trouble and highlights no one else's involvement. Why would he do this? It didn't seem to make a huge amount of sense.
No, but still, the Cardassians in the future are going to do that quite a bit. I mean, they're going to find people who are naive enough to actually, fall for something, and turns out that, guess what? It was actually the Cardassians who were behind it the whole time.
Hmm.
But, it was, okay, so what do you think about Rose's story about her being led with a piece of sugar candy into a room where her father was tortured to death? Oh, I hear the dogs upstairs like it. Yeah. Okay. Candy and Rosie say it was really, really hard-hitting. I mean, it's pretty sad for her character.
It gives her more depth, absolutely. Something, a backstory you can kind of put yourself in that situation and think, how would I feel if I was there? So, it makes you feel for the character a little bit more.
Right. Go ahead. Doc, what about you?
I don't think anyone will say anything. But I find the... So let's just think about Ro here and Ro's kind of backstory. I actually think that the story that they put across is a lot more convincing, and it feels, in my mind at least, a lot more real than when they tried to do a similar thing with Tasha Yar, right? So Tasha Yar was supposed to come from this kind of colony that had descended into, into lawlessness, and they kind of had, both had a kind of like a tough upbringing. But I just feel like the way that it gets described and the context under which it is shown in, this episode, and to be completely fair, right, Tasha Yar never had her own episode that explored her character that deeply. But I think that they really achieve what they set out to achieve in this episode by giving you the full backstory of Ro. And, you know, I can buy it. And, you know, frankly, we see parallels with other Bajorans that we come across. I mean, notably, obviously, Kira is very, very similar to Ro. And I know that there was this whole thing about maybe they were going to make Kira to be Ro in DS9. But lots of the Bajorans we run into have very much tortured pasts and you know, dark secrets and you know, very you know, very put upon childhood. And I think it's a good you know, I think it's a good part of the character to introduce.
So you're saying that, are you saying that Ro was actually supposed to go to DS9?
Oh well, okay. I don't know how much I buy that. I know that apparently they approached Michelle Forbes with the idea of taking the you know, the Ro Laren character over to DS9, where she would effectively be second officer, which was what Kira was. I don't know how serious they ever were. I personally think that the DS9 works best when the Sisko and the Kira kind of relationship is really a true difference in opinion, and I think just having two flavors of Starfleet officer wouldn't achieve the kind of the drama dynamic that is actually achieved on DS9 through having, you know, the, you know, Kira and Sisko coming from really completely different viewpoints. So I'm glad that either if they didn't offer in the end or if Michelle Forbes turned them down, I think that was the right call.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Kira would have been a whole lot better than her. I don't think Ro could ever have had the feistiness that Kira had. In the beginning, she was rather lame, but as DS9 went on, Kira grew some balls, man. And so, you're right, I think Kira was a whole lot better.
I do think it was a missed opportunity on DS9 that they didn't bring Ro in as a guest star in an episode or two.
Oh.
I think it would have been an interesting dynamic to see where she ended up during those times.
Well, because at this time she didn't join the Maquis at the time DS9 started, right?
So there was no Maquis when the DS9 started.
Right, so Ro could have tried to help Kira learn the Federation ways. At least one episode.
Well, I think that would have been a waste. I think that Kira versus Ro would have been good to see. I would imagine they would have been on opposite ends of an argument.
Okay. All right, then. So, Picard realizes that maybe Orta's telling the truth, and he decides to put a plan in place. Or, should I say, Ensign Ro puts a plan in place. And the plan is to get Orta to serve as guinea pigs and go back to the kids. Hold on. I'm missing James. Am I? Or am I? No, he's...
No, I'm here. Can you not hear me?
Oh, okay. Well, one of you guys dropped off, but you're back.
Yeah, I think I did for a second there.
Okay. Now, I don't know what... You know, the terrorist dude, I can't remember his name.
Orta.
What's in it for him to be part of this plan? This seems rather... there's no upside for him, I don't think.
Well, it exposes the real true nature of this mission. Because I was going to say, you know, however, during the trip, the Cardassians are swimming along the border, waiting to finally come and hunt the Bajorans. And... you know, they want to destroy him. So it's time to consult with Admiral Kennelly. And what does Admiral Kennelly say? Well, you know, Jean-Luc, the Cardassian Treaty is more important. So, you know, I'll bless your decision to abandon the Bajora. Wait a minute. You don't want to abandon the Bajora? Well, then, I'll bless my order to tell you to abandon the area. Leave. Let the Cardassians have them. So, now, before they do get their man, Orta, I do like the interaction with the Cardassians in that Gul'dalak, what's his name? Yeah, I think it was Gul'dalak. Well, gee, you know, because we sure appreciate our our relationship with our Cardassian neighbors, we no more than we appreciate our neighbor, our relationship with our Federation neighbors. Well, gee, you know, since we're really in love with each other, what's on your mind? And, you know, I love this dance that he does with the Bajorans. He does the same dance with the Romulans. And in the end, what the Cardassian is saying is, you know, in his sweet and loving way, that screw with us, and we're going to come after you. Just keep that in mind. But Picard does abandon the Bajorans, and I was a little disappointed in that, you know, to see them get destroyed. That is until we realize that the ship was actually empty and was remote controlled, and they're like, that was perfect. That was perfect.
Did you see that coming, though?
No.
I thought that was relatively obvious.
No. No, because, you know, they don't. They only have sub-light speed. They have half impulse. I get no half impulse. They have no video capabilities. They're not a threat. And not only not a threat, Picard actually has to abandon them. I thought this is pretty disappointing. This is bad. But no, I did not see it coming at all the first time.
But I think you can tell in like Picard's smile all the way through. I thought that he was I thought he gave the game away, even to the Admiral.
Possible, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have realized that at the time. No more than I saw Riker checking out Rose's ass. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Yeah. We were watching different parts of the episode.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I did like the reveal, though. You know, when Picard's talking to the Admiral, and he's like, "Is it a loss of all hands?" "No, sir." "Survivors?" "No, sir." What?
What? Wait, what is going on? That was good. Why would you try to say help them? They're terrorists, damn it! Yeah, of course. But his Cardassian virus was gone. So.
Well, we don't know how long it's actually been, do we? I mean, has it been a couple of days? I mean.
Must have been. And, you know, the doctors at the Starbase probably, you know, made him feel better. So. Let's see. Picard leaves, and like I said, the Cardassians fire two shots, destroy the ship. But nobody was on. That was a good thing. And it was Ro's idea. Good job, Ensign Ro. So now she gets a choice. Because she did not violate the Prime Directive, she has a choice. She can either go back to prison, or do you think they were going to release her? I'm not sure what it was.
No, they wouldn't have sent her back to prison. I think that's not fair. I mean, she did, you know, someone in authority came to her with a plan and then she did what was right. So I would expect her at least not to have to serve her sentence.
Okay. Well, the plan is, I guess, either you're free, you're on your own, or you can join Starfleet again.
Well, gee, when you give those options.
Yeah. So she joined Starfleet.
I mean, what you're mentioning here, it does have echoes of what she was mentioning herself when Riker was asking her about, you know, why she here and she was saying it wasn't her decision and et cetera, et cetera. I do like that exchange, and you can see the the fact that Ro doesn't want to be there, and you can also see that Riker is actually, you know, I think he plays it really well, and he's operating as, like, you know, perfect first officer, and he's really angry that she's getting this opportunity to come and serve on the flagship. And, you know, the line when he repeats "better than prison" and is full of disgust, it's so well delivered.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think that Riker is pretty good in this episode.
Yeah,
when not checking out her bottom,
her bum. You mean?
Indeed.
I don't want to correct you, but it is bum, right?
Yeah, it can be either.
Okay.
So I was trying to school him on proper British pronunciation.
That's it.
But I think I always get confused whenever you say this. It makes me think that what I'm saying is not used in America in any way, shape, or form. So, do you guys use the word bum in America or not?
Yes, we do. Those are the guys that stand on the end of the interstate off ramp with a can in their hand looking for money. Bum is used in a very bad whatever the word is called here. Definitely not to Paul's behind, to what's his name?
It's a very common way of referring to someone's posterior, and also it's the word that children learn first, right? So do not American kids learn about wiping their bums and things like that?
Nope.
Really? Uh-uh. Okay. So wiping your bum has got a different connotation in the USA.
Right, yeah. That's what Polly told Rocky he wasn't when, Or no, the other way around, when Rocky told Polly, you're not a bum. Okay? No, actually, he said wait a minute. No, Rocky did call him a bum. You're just a jealous, drunk bum.
Look, we still have what? We still have the word bum to refer to, the dispossessed and travelers on the tube past midnight. that's still true, but okay, I'm surprised that you guys don't.
That particular word. We have other words we use, but not. So do we really want to go through the thesaurus?
So when your daughter has fallen on her backside, she goes, "Ouch! My what is hurting?"
But.
You really say butt? That seems stronger than...
Uh-huh.
Or bottom.
Bottom. Behind.
Okay.
Or behind, yeah. That would probably be the more common one.
Yeah.
Weird.
How did we get here?
Because James isn't the type that would use the word bum very much. Mm-hmm. And so I have to draw it out of him. Like that, It just shows how we are completely two different people, and this is why this is so much fun for me. So anyway, where were we?
So anyway, she stays.
Yeah, she stays. And life goes on. There is one condition. She gets to keep her earring.
So at this point, it's a good thing it's Picard, because Riker would have said no and just walked off. And it would have been, I wonder what would have happened if that guest star had actually stayed on the Enterprise instead of being thrown off.
Uh-huh. Or more like, what would have happened if... how did the conversation in the radio room go? Number one, I have some news to tell you. Ensign Rowe will be staying in Starfleet. What? No, wait. It gets worse. It gets worse. I told her she could keep her earring on. You did what?
And she'll be on the bridge during your shift.
Yes. Yes. She's going to be in charge of Khan once in a while. Not very often. No. Don't worry about it, Will. You won't see her very much until you see a lot of her. Someday. So,
oh boy.
Well, I guess this is it. We can't chop this one up any better than this.
Oh, there was one thing I wanted to bring up, and it's just kind of a pet peeve of mine. And that's one of those. I've seen it in this episode, and now I can't unsee it. How do these uniforms work? When she gives her jacket to the kid.
Yeah, you're talking about the comm badge, right?
Well, that and the fact that she takes it off like it's a coat, there's a seam down the front somewhere that wasn't there when she beamed down.
Maybe it's Velcroed. There's a seam there that wasn't there when she beamed down.
Well, because these uniforms, they close up the back. But when she's taking it off to give to the kid, she opens it from the front.
The uniform, but not the jacket.
Well, the uniform jacket.
Really?
She takes it off and gives it to the kid.
Yeah. But I always assumed that was part of the design, that those jackets open up in front. They're different than... Because don't we see Picard with his jacket open once in a while?
Well, that's Picard's special jacket.
Yeah, Picard's special jacket is different. But I think the point is that Ro doesn't wear a jacket at all until milliseconds before she needs to take a jacket off. Up until then, it looks like it's
it's just a standard uniform. With the steam in the back.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Ever since I saw that, every time I watch this episode, that's all I see is it's a regular uniform. Then all of a sudden, it's a different one. And yeah, the comm badge, too, goes from the jacket to the shirt seamlessly. I don't know. It's just one of those little things that bugs me every time I see it.
Well, obviously, what they cut is they cut her, putting her arm in, swiveling the jacket around, putting her arm out again, unzipping, removing the comm badge.
Huh.
Granted, it's a practical purpose. I understand. Still.
Okay. Well, cool. Okay, I guess we're done then, right?
Well, yeah. I think it's interesting that we do introduce a new character, right? It is a new character that comes in. I don't think we're really given many clues throughout the episode that this person's going to be staying around forever. I think it's... maybe she gets a bit more screen time than most other guest stars. But I think it's a very nice thing that they did to... I suppose in a way you might say it's a replacement for Wesley having left. But Wesley left over a year ago. I think it's a very nice addition to the to the family, which I didn't see coming. You know, certainly as a kid watching TNG, it wasn't on my radar that someone would be joining the crew on a semi-permanent basis.
Okay.
You want to speculate a little bit? What do you think happened to Kennelly?
Hopefully he got his room on the east wing of the stockade, because the west wing gets awfully hot in the afternoon.
I mean, as if you can choose where you are in prison. I mean,
I think she was being sarcastic.
Sure. Also, didn't they have segregated men, female, male prisons in the 24th century?
Well, who knows? Maybe they're more advanced and they don't do such things. Well, I mean, I don't think prison life is the same in the 24th century as it is today.
No, I was just remembering that scene in Caretaker when Janeway comes to meet Paris.
Yeah, he's out pruning or something, isn't he?
Yeah, he was doing some sort of gardening work, as I recall. But,
yeah.
So, yeah, maybe it's not as bad. I don't know.
Well, let's hope that what goes on in prison doesn't go on in prison in the 24th century. And that's all I'm going to say about that. And if you don't know what I mean, Doc, sorry. I'll leave that for you to think.
No, I don't know what you mean. I would imagine the Admiral ends up... I mean, do all these bad Admirals end up being... going to retirement home for bad Admirals or something? I think that often in the episode they get their comeuppance and they end up... Do they end up dead often? I mean, what happened to Pressman and... I know the guys in Conspiracy pretty much ended up dead. Then the high kicking Admiral.
Or Admiral Satie. What happened to her?
Oh, yeah, she went mad.
Yeah, she's in a sane asylum right now. But no, basically, if Admiral Kennelly was in today's prison, he'd probably be somebody's bitch. That's what I'm getting at.
I think there's an equivalent to an old person's house, an old Admiral's, evil Admiral's association somewhere, where they're all sitting there and they, every half season or so, a new dodgy Admiral gets sent in to join them at their poker game.
So I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for that.
If it wasn't for that Picard.
That's a good point, yeah. Damn him. Damn that Picard. All right. So we're done.
We've solved that one.
Good. So I guess we're down to our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Now, Matt, you wanted to come on, so you get to tell us what you think first and give your rating.
Boy, oh boy. Okay. Well, like I said, I really enjoyed this episode. I think it does provide fodder for many storylines down the road. So it was, you know, to think that it started pretty much here, you know, it's interesting to see how they developed it. And I do like the character of Rolaren. Like I said, she comes in and she shakes the crew up. She definitely puts everybody on edge. And like I think, like you had said earlier, she takes Picard and she's what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of running roughshod on him. She's not the yes person. She's not agreeable. She's saying that plan's not going to work. That's we need to do something different. That's something that's actually going to be constructive. She has a different approach than the crew normally has, and I think that's kind of a nice perspective to shake things up a little bit. And and she's always been one of my favorite characters on the show, and I look forward to I like the episodes that she's in, and I think she gives that confrontational flair to about it that you don't normally see on board. But as a whole, I thought this was a good one, a good introduction to the character and the Bajoran storyline as a whole, and it blossoms from this point onward. So this one I would give a rating of, I'd say it's a 4 out of 5.
Okay, 4. Okay, I'm gonna go next. Like you said, it does flush out, start the Bajorans in their path to the occupation and salvation and the resistance. And I do like what they become in the future. But this is where it starts, and I think it was a great start. It is a very good start. This exposes the Cardassians, I believe, as the slimy people they are, trying to manipulate others in clever ways, but like I said, for some reason, it just never really works for them. They always get found out, but they still find future puppets that never seem to suspect a thing, even though the Cardassians have been known to try and manipulate situations. Or I even think the Cardassians sometimes can come up with scenarios and ways to trick people even better than the Romulans. And the Romulans are pretty damn sneaky. So, it's a good story. I mean, it's not one that goes on car rides with me, so I'm not going to be giving it a 5. But I don't mind watching it on occasion. I like Rolaren. I like her spunk. I like, even my dog agrees. Yes, exactly. She likes the fact that she's a tough character, and she doesn't care what anybody else says. She's going to bark what she wants to bark. Bark? What do you mean bark? Well, anyway, so that's what I like about Rolaren. I like, I thought it was funny the way she said, request a room on the east wing of the stockade, because, the west wing gets awfully hot. That's pretty smart-assy, and that's just the way she is, and I appreciate that. I had said I usually have a pretty bad opinion of Rolaren, so I'm hoping that I'm going to take a look at her from each episode and, try not to be so down on her, because this, I think she did a pretty good job. And as Miss Timmison in the last episode that Michelle Forbes played on, she did a good job there too. So far, I've got no reason to not like her. So for this episode, I agree. I was thinking about giving this one a 3. I started going in with a 3, but I was even thinking as we went on maybe a 3.5, but I think, Matt, you're right. I think this is a 4. So sometimes I change my rating by the end of the episode. It's funny. Or even by the end of my review, because I look at things like you brought up and it make perfect sense. So sometimes I up it, sometimes I down it. But this time it goes up to a 4. What about you, Doc?
So actually, we're going to have agreement across the board this week, because I'm going to come in at a 4 as well, 4 out of 5 on my rating. I was actually very tempted to go higher as well. I think that the episode is slightly let down by the silly Admiral story. I think the Admiral is too one-dimensional, and I don't really see why he's doing what he's doing. But if you kind of park that to the side, I think the story of the introduction of the Bajorans, and it's very good. I think it's also dealing with, I mean, you know, I think we live in a different world now than we did in 91 or whenever this particular thing came out. I think it's actually dealing with relatively sophisticated issues for the kind of show that it is and for the kind of world that was back then. So I really think it does a very good job of introducing, you know, relatively complicated ideas, touching on relatively difficult and interesting subjects. They introduce a very kind of nuanced character, and it's a good performance from Michelle Forbes, who then stays around and really adds to the show. You know, really, I echo almost everything what Matt was saying, because I hope that you'd ask me to go first, Lou, because I was going to say, you know, exactly the same things and just repeat again. Overall, I'm very, you know, very impressed by this episode. And it's one that I didn't, in my memory banks, I didn't have this down as a great, great episode, but it really is good. It really is, you know, pretty much as much as I can ask for. Yeah, overall, 4 out of 5 from me.
Good enough. All right, 4 out of 5. And so far, out of the 3 episodes, the guests still like Star Trek more than we do.
Well, apparently I'm in pretty lockstep with you guys, because the last episode I was on, I think we all agreed on the score as well.
That must have been a 3 all round, right?
It was, I think, as I recall, it was The Loss, and I'm pretty sure we all gave it a 2.
2.
Oh, okay. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you want to go back and change your number to a 1. No, we gave it a 2, so. Cool enough. Let's see when I have you back again, Matt. Like I said, I was busting your balls earlier. Conundrum is... No, that's not it. You're the wrong person.
Although that'd be a great episode to do.
It would be. No, it's the one after that. Power Play.
Yes.
Is the one you have. We have to have Chris on, because he goes by Kieran McDuff. And so Conundrum is where Riker and Ro hook up, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Good job. And for some reason, don't they remember that they did it? They couldn't remember who they are. But somehow they've mastered the English language, and they sure know how to hump. So that's a good thing that only selective parts of their memory was lost.
I mean, in complete fairness, I think that people, they don't need to be taught how to hump, do they?
I suppose not.
I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, maybe Riker does keep all of those thoughts in his short-term memory, because it's so readily accessible. But I think it's kept elsewhere than short-term memory.
Well, maybe he has a log in his quarters that says, what to do if you ever forget how to hump. Step 1. He goes step by step.
Well, he's got all this...
Like, not a physical log, but actually a written log.
Yes, it's on his desk. Okay. It's probably carved into his desk, so, you know, the paper can't ever be lost.
Well, he's got that little holographic imager thing that he keeps in his quarters, you know, to watch the women play the instruments and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Okay.
So I'm sure that whatever program that is, there's a lot of how-to videos that come with it.
How-to videos. Good idea, yes. Yes. Here, Will. Here's an example of something you've done. Oh, I'm sorry. Now, she had no idea that was being recorded, but that's beside the point. It was for his consumption only, so it's okay. It doesn't break the wiretapping laws, because one person knew it was being recorded.
Well, you've given a lot of thought to this.
Yeah, definitely. I want to be like Riker someday. Oh, anyway. Okay, guys. Well, then, is there anything else you want to bring up before we go?
No, but you do have to do the outro.
I am.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
An alien killing force attacks an innocent planet.
It's already killed thousands. It will undoubtedly continue to kill unless we stop it.
But Data may possess the secret to its deadly power.
You believe that I lured the entity here?
I am accusing you of collaborating with that monster.
Now the race is on to stop its path of destruction.
I want to try to communicate with it.
Gambling with Fate on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Well then, join us next time as we review Episode 4 of Season 5, that's Silicon Avatar. And, you know, I never knew what an avatar was. I always thought that was Silicon Avatar. I had no idea that it was Avatar. But we should be joined by Colin. Hopefully Colin will be available, and we should have Colin on for that. So, everyone, thank you for joining us. Take care, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
All right. Oh, that's funny.